is Roger Green, host of the Surfing the Mesh Tsunami podcast. This week, we are offering 5 conversations from episode 5. I will look at the role NITs will play in 2024 with Naeem Alkhouri and Ian Rowe. Plus, from the vault, our first discussion of MASEF last summer. This conversation explores the challenges with using today's NITs to diagnose and stage patients with F2 or F3 mesh fibrosis. Panelists then describe other ways to determine which patients to treat with resmetirom or other drugs. I start by remembering Jeff McIntyre's suggestion during episode 2 3 weeks ago that the initial target MASH patient population might be only a few 100,000 patients, less than expected, and to ask how confident we are that we can identify them properly. The rest of the discussion addresses this question from a few different perspectives. Ian Rowe discusses the inadequacy of current tests to stage patients in or outside such a narrow window. Jorn Schottenberg suggests he will take a more pragmatic approach to prescribing based on patient risks and comorbidities. Naeem Alkhouri shifts the discussion from FIB4 to VCTE, noting that variability exists around what different guidelines recommend as the correct cutoff points for cirrhosis. Eventually, Naeem begins to discuss some of the newer NITs he is considering, ranging from the metabolomics-based MASEF test to multiple scanning devices. As the conversation winds down, Jorn Schottenberg describes factors that can render a test inappropriate for a specific patient, and Louise Campbell suggests that the right test or tests will depend on the specific question the provider is trying to answer. After availability of a MASH drug, making proper use of NITs in diagnosing, staging, and tracking patients remains a critical challenge for 2024. There's a great deal to reflect on, and we cover a lot of territory here. So just sit back, listen, learn, enjoy, and when you're done, join the dialogue in our LinkedIn discussion group. I made the decision not to invite a patient advocate today, but as I listen to Ian's comments, I think back to Jeff McIntyre 2 weeks ago talking about the definition of the initial NASH drug target population in the U.S. being just a few 100,000 people. I think that was what he said, 200,000 to 300,000. Do I remember that number correctly? Which, Ian, means in a country of our size that we're fundamentally going to take the what you just described, shrink it by a factor of 10, and then try to cope with it. And you're not talking about anything quite as tight as that. So what do you foresee would make that better or more manageable or help us do a better job of identifying a non-cirrhotic need-to-treat population, if that's going to be the target for resmetirom, for example?
Ian Rowe.
Well, that's a nearly impossible question with the tool that we have, because they're good, but they're not perfect. So we either need a sort of shift in the way that we think, so away from tied to fibrosis stage and towards prognosis, or we need better tests and or better availability of better tests.
Yeah.
And the sort of logical conclusion of that means that you'd need MR elastography for everybody, but that's not a tractable solution in a high prevalence disease. So there are trade-offs on all sides of that.
Jorn Schottenberg.
Let me take a pragmatic shot at this, Ian, and I think Naeem has a comment on that too. If we see a patient with fatty liver disease and he has ALT, double upper limit of normal, and he has a fibroscan that's abnormal, I'm just going to treat him and see what happens, because if I have a drug that's fairly safe, that's the good point. The question then comes in, what does the label say and what does the payer say? In the European system, it will be treatment according to label, and the payer will have to cope with that. And I think in the US, and Naeem, you're in a better position to say that than I am, the payers could actually come up with extra rules and regulations on who you have to select for treatment.
Naeem Alkhouri.
To follow up on what you're saying, Ian, regarding, ruling out cirrhosis, I'm just curious, what cut point would you use to rule out cirrhosis with liver stiffness, with the KPA, and then maybe with ELF and FIB4? Because the ASLD and their guidance document published a table, actually, would rule in and rule out cut points for cirrhosis, and the rule out cut points are ridiculously low that you would be excluding all the patients that will benefit from resmetirom. So I would love to hear your thoughts and what cut points would you use?
Well, this is exactly the problem, is that we haven't defined those cut points, because the way that we've thought has been about identification of significant disease. I don't know that anybody's using tests like that. And that's why those thresholds are very low, because if you don't want to miss cirrhosis, then you have to have a liver stiffness value of less than 8 or 9 or maybe 10. There's only gray.
Yeah, I think this is the point I was trying to make. If you guys look at the guidance document to rule out cirrhosis, they have liver stiffness listed less than 8. Well, that's like if you want to be 100%, but then, actually resmetirom in my mind is going to be indicated for patients with liver stiffness of at least 8 and higher. Of course, if your liver stiffness is 20 or, 18, but low platelet count, you can diagnose cirrhosis that way. But this is very important that we cannot just say, oh, use the guidance document to rule out cirrhosis because it's going to create major issues. I think, Roger, during the Desert Liver Conference, we had several cases, how we're going to use resmetirom. And as Jorn, mentioned, if you have someone with liver stiffness of 11.5 kPa and the ALT is at 60-70 and you do imaging, the liver, surface is smooth, there's no splenomegaly, the platelet count is very good, the FIB4 is low, I have no problem starting a patient like that on resmetirom. In my mind, this is a patient with F3 fibrosis. Of course, with FibroScan, you can never be very confident about one specific fibrosis stage, but this is someone at least with significant fibrosis. I think we have a lot of safety data in patients with early cirrhosis that resmetirom is safe, and I think this is the patient population I want to treat aggressively. We cannot be paralyzed by nuances and, studies that evaluated every single test in multiple populations, and, you have to keep in mind your positive predictive value and negative predictive value are affected by the population you study and the prevalence of the disease state you're trying to identify. So I think there is a practical way. I think we have hundreds of patients in our own practice that are ready to be on resmetirom. I think the estimates are around 6-7 million people with F2 fibrosis and MASH in the United States, but I agree that the majority of them are not in the care of a specialist who's going to get them started on resmetirom. And that goes back to the first point that you brought up, which is really, what pathway we're going to use and is it really going to change after the medicine is approved? Can we fight that lack of aggressiveness in identifying disease stage by primary care doctors and endocrinologists if we have treatment? And I think the answer will be yes, once we start showing them examples of patients that are seen by them that will benefit from resmetirom, that if they didn't do a FIB4 or fiber scan would have been easily missed.
So first of all, audience, if you're wondering why Ian didn't respond to that, he's fallen off the call for the moment. He'll be back, I'm sure. Jorn, go ahead.
Those are the points Naeem has raised, and I've been thinking to myself, again, not having access to the drug for a little bit of time, I'll learn from what Naeem and colleagues are going to be doing in the US. I think the other thing is patients are going to be asking us about the drug. They're going to be asking, well, why don't I get the drug? And how can you relate on that NIT, knowing all its flaws, to not give me that drug or recommend it? So I think we want to be cost effective and treat the right people. There's going to be a lot of patients asking for that drug, and based on what am I going to rule them out? So this is the other challenge, right?
Just to add to this, I think this would be one of the questions for today is, what else can we do besides FibroScan, ALT? We talked about MR elastography. ELF is focused on liver fibrosis, but to diagnose at-risk MASH, the patient population for resmetirom, we recently started doing a test called OWL Liver, which is based on this massive score. This is based on metabolomics and the identification of specific lipid species that can predict at-risk MASH. And I find it easy to order, and we've done it in 100 patients. I'm waiting to analyze the data, so I hope I can share with you guys at a following episode. We've also done something called Liver Fast, which is different than the FAST score. This is a blood test that's similar to FibroTest or FibroSure, but they use AI to improve the algorithm, and it has several, biomarkers for fibrosis, and it gives you disease activity, disease steatosis grade, and fibrosis stage. So this is another thing. I think, Roger, we talk a lot about NITs to monitor response to treatment, and we have, all these sophisticated things that we talk about in academia, but, during the Desert Liver Conference, we realized that we're going to use your ALT, AST, and liver stiffness on FibroScan, maybe the CAP score, and follow. But the key is it's going to be multiple assessments. It's not going to be just two time points like what we do in the clinical trials with the biopsy. And the trend is going to be more important than just a two time point assessment and reassessment.
That's so important. I think it comes down to, it's almost like an area under the curve. How is it changing? Where did they start? You're not going to use the one where they come in with pneumonia and are on antibiotics, and you're not going to consider that for the treatment indication. There's so many aspects influencing ALT, of course. But really, if you have longitudinal repeated assessment of that test, you get a sense of the baseline level, you get a sense of changes and fluctuations in patients, and then you can use it to make recommendations in therapy. I agree. It's the simple things, the simple tests done right that could be used in clinical practice more easily. Everything else is not going to be available at the scale we need access to.
Louise Campbell.
No, and I think just
commenting on a couple of things that have been raised. Liver units have ALT and AST. Primary care, a lot, and Michael Battelle said this in Canada, they don't have access to it. So I think there are multiple questions to ask. We need to put our healthcare structures in place so these calculations are calculated like HbA1c, like all of these things. They're calculated when somebody does a test as routine to flag it up to primary care in any country. We probably need to standardize a lot of diagnosed early non-invasive tests and biomarkers. And that's a difficulty we have in the UK. The majority of areas still do not have AST access. To add that on can be in the region of £69, which makes it more costly than some of the FibroScans themselves. So there's various problems. When we look at who to treat, we've got a very good example in the UK. When we did the hepatitis C rollout, it was controlled from a governmental or NHS England level, whereby we ruled in people with lower disease cut thresholds, 10.5 kilopascals, to ensure that we treated not only the patients with cirrhosis, but the patients with developing disease to try and slow down that progress. And what we saw was a big reduction in liver transplant needs, patients not being as anxious. And I know that Tony Velotti and other patients on the podcast have said, what happens to me? And I think, Jean, you raised that question. I'm in that no man's land group. I want to stop the progression of the disease. So I think it depends what question we're asking and answering. Are we trying to avoid liver transplantation, reduce cancer thresholds in these populations that are at higher risk? And we can therefore be a little bit more lenient on the cut thresholds. But whether or not we use FibroScan, whether or not we use other non-invasives, I think the school's out. But we've just got to get that first one. Fib4 is not perfect, but it's better than what we had before, which was nothing in all reality.
And now, back to Roger.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. If you have any questions or comments about the content of this conversation or the entire episode, please put them in the review section of the page from which you downloaded this conversation, or send an email to questions@surfingmash.com. We're still working on next week's episode, possibly a payer episode, possibly something else. Watch, listen to this space for details. Until then, stay safe, surf on. We'll see you on the podcast. Bye-bye now.